Matt Sullivan here to remind you to stop putting screens on your gutters. Better to schedule a free estimate with the local experts at Gutter Helmet so you stay off the ladder. Visit gutterhelmetindy.com. With Gutter Helmet, you'll never clean your gutters again. gutterhelmetindy.com.
It's time to hear from you. Kendall and Casey present Voicemails. Brought to you by QC Kinetics for non-surgical regenerative medicine treatment at 317-559-PAIN.
Oh, we got a new intro. How fabulous, Kevin.
Yeah, does that make you want to dance?
You're really spicing it up for the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin's playing the funk today.
317-684-8444. That's the phone number if you'd like to be a part of the show. 317-684-8444. I'm Rob. Brad's in for Casey today. Okay, so one of the things that came up last night at that governor's debate, and there was a lot of discussion when that moderator would get out of the way and stop injecting himself into the whole debate process, was about the IEDC. And about the amount of money that is taken from poor and middle class people every year to the tune of $500 million every 2 years. And that money is largely used to attract some of the richest, most powerful corporations in the world. You're getting your notes out.
That was question number three.
For those who have missed early in the show, Brad took 8 pages of notes off the debate last night. And look, the IEDC is... I mean, they hit Chambers. It was clearly they were going after Chambers
on
this. And they hit him pretty good on it. And what was Chambers going to do? Go, yeah, you're right. It's a totally corrupt, terrible organization. And sorry for partying. And I think it's interesting how Doden tries to spin out, because, of course, he was IEDC director before Chambers, and going, well, it was different when I was running the show. And it's like, no, you guys are both super connected, super rich people, which is why you're in that. We're put in those positions. And your job is to bring mega corporations to the state of Indiana. Yeah. And you're using our money, you're taking money from regular people, and you're using our money to bring these megacorps to the state of Indiana.
That's exactly what they're doing, which it was interesting because it came up, should the state be acquiring all this land and then giving it to people?
Right.
And that's a fantastic question.
And Rittenhour hit the nail on the head, which is there's many problems with this, but one of the biggest problems is, and we had, you know, some of these farmers out in Boone County on our show last year talking about this. It's not that they're coming in declaring eminent domain, but what they do is these lawyers and state reps or whatever, or representatives from these companies come in and they say, okay, and they make it clear to you in their own language, you don't have to sell to us. You can choose to fight us, or we can give you this exorbitant amount of money for your land, and you can fight us, and we'll see how that ends in the end. And you, these farmers who came in last year, basically saying people are walking out going, well, if I fight them, I could lose anyway, or I could take this exorbitant amount of money because it's being backed up by taxpayer money, and I could just leave. And most people are choosing to just take the money and leave.
Well, even if they win, they're still an island in the midst of this giant development. I mean, their farmstead will never be the same.
You're exactly right. The character of the land goes away. And so somebody called about this.
Hey, Indiana is a haven for tramp corporations. Just look at the deals these corporations get when they come here. They don't have any taxes to pay. The General Assembly don't have any jurisdiction over them. Yeah, they good for a while until the good times run out. All they do is come into a state, drain the resources, then threaten for more. If they don't get them, they leave for another sucker. Indiana is nothing but a patsy and a haven for tramp corporations.
Now, that was our buddy Larry, I think.
That was crazy Larry.
I don't think there was a whole bunch of crazy in what he said.
No, I'm just going to say, mark the time, 10:37 a.m. on Wednesday, April 24th. I'm agreeing with Larry.
Look, he's not totally accurate in the sense of when I used to always get into this with people about abatements in a community when like a warehouse would be built. Yes, depending on what your economic development standards are in your community, and we had very tight ones when I was running Brownsburg, but there is an abatement process by which those taxes are phased in.
Right.
Nobody ever doesn't pay taxes. That's a huge misnomer. Those buildings pay taxes from day one. Now, it could be 10 years before it pays its full tax rate. The argument is, would you year one rather have 10% of $100 million assessed value, or would you rather have just $0? And there's genuine arguments on both sides. However, that building will always pay some taxes. But when you factor in abatements and now this money that's coming from the IEDC, he's not wrong in the sense of you can have a 10-year plan to milk the heck out of this and really, I don't know if subvert is the right word.
Well, it's kind of the
a
Walmart.
Lot of your what otherwise would be your tax obligation.
It's the Walmart plan. The way Walmart works is they'll go into a smaller town like a Rushville or Greenfield or whatever. They will get a developer to build them a spec building that is bigger than everything else in town. They will have a short-term lease. Well, then at the end of 5 years or 10 years, Walmart says, all right, we want you to cut our rent in half. And the landlord's like, nope, can't do that. It's going to stay the same. Well, then they'll go out and find somebody else to build them a spec building. And that's why suddenly you have all these empty buildings that used to be Walmarts, because there's nobody else that wants a building that large in these communities.
Yeah, the logical answer to all of this is that if we just created a tax environment that was beneficial to everyone, people would want to come here.
Correct.
Because it benefits everyone. But what the Republicans have done, especially under Holcomb, I mean, it's been on steroids under Holcomb, is they take money from other people, regular people who don't have power or influence, and they create this environment by which these already large corporations will benefit immensely. And we've had, I think State Affairs was the website that did that article about how there's a the IEDC is not fulfilling the job obligations that are in many cases being promised. It's hard to get information. Curtis, I think, called it a quasi-government agency and laughed at that phrase last night. It is. The IEDC is awful. And the next governor needs to blow that thing up, because the IEDC appears to be working for the rich and the powerful and the bright and how many bright, shiny objects can we connect? And the next governor, and I have no faith Braun's going to do this, given who's kind of running his campaign and who he's connected to, but they need to blow that IEDC up, because it is bad news.
Well, the Leap District, I think, is a project too far for some of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, that they flex their muscle. I still have a moral problem taking prime farm ground out of production to do this. They could have done this in Tippecanoe County or somewhere else, but for whatever reason, they wanted proximity.
Well, and there's no, you're never going to convince me that that's a giant coincidence they chose Boone County in Lebanon, given who the mayor is and who he's connected to. And but we'll get into that. We've got into that before. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the convention that's coming up, because let's face it, this governor's race has been a snooze fest. The real race, Brad, is going to begin after we know who the governor nominee is, because then we go to convention, and hot dang, that lieutenant governor's race is going to be off the charts.
Get the popcorn.
There will be nothing boring once from May to the middle of June. And somebody did ask, we've obviously talked a lot about this, that whoever it is, because it ain't going to be Rittenhour, and it ain't going to be Curtis. Sorry, they'd be my two choices, but it ain't going to happen. And so whether it's Braun, whether it's Doden, whether it's Crouch, or whether it's Chambers, you can't trust any of those four. And the only chance you got to get anything done out of the executive branch is to have somebody in the number two slot who isn't beholden to anybody.
Yeah, I've run for lieutenant governor before. Should I announce my intentions now?
Is Rainwater... They already picked a lieutenant governor, didn't they?
Yeah, for the Republicans still need to pick one.
That's right. You should get in there.
I'm a free agent.
Yeah, and you have experience.
I do have experience, exactly. I can stand on that stage.
Somebody called with a question about how the convention and the delegates actually work.
Hey, just had a question. How do the delegates select a lieutenant governor? Is it that they take a vote and the majority, whoever has a majority, automatically gets it? Or do they have to get like 50% plus one, so they take a vote, the lowest one drops out, and they keep doing that until somebody gets 50% plus one? Just wondered how that process works.
Yes. So the winner is whoever gets to 50% plus one. So let's say that there are 1,800 delegates, which I think is the number. The winner for the lieutenant governor's race at convention is, and it's actually based on the amount of votes cast.
Right.
So one of the big issues, and this you've seen this in close races over the years, I think like the treasurer's race was decided by three votes on the third or fourth ballot. People went home.
Right.
So you have fewer people. So one of the challenges at a convention is not only getting your people elected delegate, which is going on right now, it's getting them then to pay the fee to the Republican Party, because there's whatever, $150 or whatever you got to pay. Then you got to show up to the convention, and getting people to stay all day, because sometimes it'll take 3, 4, 5 ballots depending on how many people are running. So if there's only two people running for lieutenant governor, let's say Braun has a handpicked Toady and Micah, then somebody's going to get 50% plus one on the first ballot. But if you get three, four, five people in, which it could be, and nobody gets 50% plus one of the total votes cast on the first ballot, then somebody drops off and everybody votes again until somebody gets 50% plus one.
Now, I do like the Libertarians at their convention. They always have none of the above as a valid choice.
I love that. I love that. That's actually really smart. As usual, the Libertarians leading the way. One more call real quick. Yesterday, we got into a long conversation about what could be the death of the self-scan stations, because apparently there's all sorts of thievery going on these days.
And not everybody's honest.
Shocking, right, Brad? So now companies are saying, well, it may end up just being cheaper from a loss prevention standpoint to pay somebody to, you know, man the scanning aisles now and go back to the way things used to be. And our old pal Trucker John had a story about being forced to use the employee scanner.
Back in the day when I was younger, around, you know, my late teens, I would have loved self-checkout at the Walmart, because there was one time way back when I was going through the checkout. It was probably about 11 midnight or so, and I was going in to buy a couple of things. And one of those things happened to be a box of male birth control enhancements, you know, condoms. And I wasn't really paying attention. The Walmart, you know, in my town only had one checkout open late at night. I just walked up, threw my stuff onto the counter, and wasn't really paying too much attention. And that's when I discovered the lady working the checkout was usually a day shift worker, but had been called in to cover the night shift. And it was my girlfriend at the time's mother. So that was an interesting conversation that I had to have. Yeah. Not my proudest moment.
You know, I love Trucker John because he has no shame about anything that's ever happened in his life. He's more of an open book than we are, Brad, and we're the radio people.
That's why he's radio gold.
That's right.